Okay, guys, this is the voice of Sean Weathers, star and director of this film. And I'm joined by Jerry Landy, who did cinematography for about 90% of the film and is also a co-producer with me on Vault of Terror 2, The Undead, which this is also the wraparound story for.
How you doing, guys? Nice to be here, Sean.
Cool. Thanks for joining me on this commentary track, Jerry.
Cool. Yeah, it's nice to actually see a finished product after all the work we put into this. So,
absolutely,
it'll be fun observing it again, especially in its cut form.
Yeah. So that first stuff you saw there, it's going to be almost a year from when the Fappening happened to when the movie comes out. So I just want to remind people of what the Fappening was. So.
Yeah. So here, oh, Erica. Erica is awesome. This is Erica Smith here in the opening. She's playing Kim Kardashian, I should say, right? In the movie, does a deadpan job of playing Kim Kardashian. She was a lot of fun to work with. Actually, I hired her on my last film because of working with her on The Fappening, so.
Yeah, you were a big fan of hers because I worked with several scream queens in this film, and she was the one that you like really wanted to work with on your next film that we shot like right after this.
And then I realized that I actually met Erica years ago when she was doing a movie called Bite Me. She's actually works for my distributor, Alternative Cinema, made a bunch of movies with her. So she was such a professional. She was great. She wanted to do something else with the role, but then when I talked to her and told her what direction I wanted to go in, she got right on board, took over, and she's like I said, I met her on The Fappening and worked with her because I shot a lot of the movie with Sean and told her I want to use you on my next film just for her acting in here. So yeah, she's really good. Really good.
I actually met her through Rachel Robbins, who is also in this film. And with this scene here, basically this guy is Mr. Showbiz, and he has like an entertainment site. I think he said he worked for Entertainment Weekly and a few other entertainment sites as a reporter, and he started his own website. And he was going to come and do a little behind the scenes and talk to us about the film. And instead of just interviewing us, why not just try to find a way to get him in the film? That's just extra press, more incentive for him to help us push it. So I quickly wrote this scene in specifically to get him in the film, and it turned out to be a great thing because not only does it start off the movie, but it also gives Erica more screen time, and I think she does a great job in this scene. And also for those of you following the scroll at the bottom, it's a lot of references to some of my past films.
Strapgate.
Because I hate the fact that the Patriots cheat and get away with it and nobody cares. And obviously I take a shot at the Knicks and the cops and the NYPD. But aside from that, there's a couple references to my films. The Trade-Off, there's a reference to, and Hookers in Revolt, there's a reference to on the bottom scroll if you guys...
two great films.
Check that out.
I love Hookers in Revolt. Yeah, she, like I said, it's really cool when you get an actress and she's so good. Oh, okay, this is Amani B, right?
Yeah. she had her tits taped up so much. It's like a
like
robot.
She looked like the mummy. And so I don't know, we're making a mummy. And there's Sky, who I also hired in my new movie because she was so great. And there's Erica.
Yeah. But yeah, the first girl, she made sure every inch of her tits were completely covered up in every way. She did not want to show any flesh.
It was like a medical exam.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. There's the spare bedroom of my house. I've never seen that much action, I think.
Yeah, the funny thing is, like, that was like one of the rare interior shots that I got outside of my house.
Yeah.
And inside of my house there are like green rooms and blue rooms and yellow rooms, and we go to your house and what do we get? We get another orange bright colored room.
And there's a red room.
And here's a red room in your house. Here's back to her. So it's like every room is like a bright color. It's almost like a cartoon.
It's like a 70s film. But yeah. Shooting this movie was the first time I actually shot sex scenes. So this was like I told Sean, it was like being dropped into the jungles with just a little bit of water and a camera, and told, okay, here we go, we're going to have sex scenes, and never shot it before, so this was my boot camp, as you could see, all of these scenes I shot here, love pink, gotta love pink.
Yeah. There's a decent diversity of women, decent diversity of sex scenes, some of it's very tame, some of it's very softcore. But try to mix it up in there, chop it up, so it's like it all flows together.
So. Yeah, it's nude. Nice to have cute women when you're doing nude scenes, and especially women who can actually act like they're having sex. Sometimes it's hard when a girl is simulating sex and she just looks like nothing's happening.
So. Yeah, she looks very bored. Like, Let me just slip it in there and wake you up.
I'll just put the head in. That's it. To see what happens.
Just a tip.
And there's Cybele, who I also hired. Sean said to me, if it wasn't for this movie, I probably wouldn't have 95% of the cast for Coexistence Beneath the Surface. So he's right. I met all these actresses on The Fappening. Spent a little over a month in Brooklyn shooting this film with Sean. It was the second time we worked together. He was on set for Demonic Frequency, but this movie we were actually with Sal Amore, and I were out in Brooklyn helping Sean shoot this. And it was, I always said the sequence was interview, sex, kill, and that was the sequence.
That was the sequence, because aside from like the quote unquote scream queens, a lot of the girls like this one here, Kata, who we ended up working with again on your
my movie, yes.
But yeah, with a lot of these girls, they just showed up, and it's like, all right, we shoot the conversation like this. And there were about 12 to 13 of these parts, maybe even more. There was a ton of parts like these, where it was just me and the actress on the couch, and they were yelling at me, and it was like, I let them pick which one they wanted. We do one of these, like Jerry said, then we do a sex scene, then we do a murder scene, and sometimes we do a scene where they're walking up the stairs as well. So it was like a three-prong thing.
Yeah, but just with the plots with the actresses. And like I said, I met all of these actresses, and you know, when you're making a movie during downtime, you sit and talk with them, and you kind of like them. Then there's Imani B, who I was going to hire, but it didn't work out.
It happens sometimes. But yeah, Sal was great too.
I brought Sal from the Bronx to Brooklyn, and Sal helped me prep the actors. I should say helped Sean prep the actors. So, you know, while Sean was doing other things, because if you guys know how Sean works, Sean does everything. Sean's on the phone with the actresses, he's setting up shots, he's doing script changes, he's doing everything. So I brought Sal on board to help me since I was shooting it, and Sal is like a great asset to my crew. So I said, let me bring Sal over to help Sean with this project. And like Sean said, Sal made a big difference with the actresses. He actually sat with them and worked with them before they got on screen, which made our jobs so much easier.
Yeah, because I think like all the girls in this couch scene, they were all girls that showed up and shot the day of.
Yeah.
So their makeup may not look great, but that was just because like we didn't have like a makeup artist and they weren't necessarily fully prepared to shoot. So a lot of like, I think all of these girls, I don't think there's one. Yeah, all of these girls that are in this couch sequence, these were all girls. I met them the same day I shot this with them, and it was a very quick turnaround. So Sal working with these actresses definitely helped a lot to get them prepared and ready to shoot. Because I had a friend of mine who was supposed to do that for me, but he just got way into too many cerebral things about, you know, past experiences and different things like that. And it wasn't really any help. You just want him to remember a couple of lines and move on to the next scene. You don't want him to spend like 2 or 3 hours remembering and talking about past stories and boyfriends and this and what makes him.
I know all of these girls' personal lives from working with them that day. Because like I said, you're sitting around during takes and you're having lunch breaks or whatever, and you sit and talk to people. So you're on a close set, you know, and this is what happens. But yeah, I've seen all of these girls naked. I'm looking at this now. I'm like, yeah, they were all in love scenes in Sean's house. So sorry, honey, it's work. Have to do it. This is the only actress I don't think I worked with her.
Yeah, she was one that showed up late in the process. And basically, once I met Erica and I decided to go in a direction to make her a Kardashian type, the part that I had written that I was casting Erica for was actually this role here that this actress is reading. And yeah, after I got Erica, I was going to scrap this part because I had rewrote her part so drastically, like I couldn't use it. But when this girl showed up, I just gave her Erica's role, and I shot. It was just me and her, and I just set up the camera. And
I love the mace. I love she's got the mace on you, waiting for you. Like I said, I didn't work with her, and I wasn't on set this day. So when I was watching Sean's cut, I was like, "Oh no, I didn't see this." And I really laughed at this part because she's ready to mace him just in case he does something stupid. It's funny.
Yeah.
She's very pretty, too. Very pretty actress.
Yeah, she is. She is.
But, yeah, we had a lot of fun shooting this movie. It was Sean going back to his horror movie roots, too, which...
It's been a while.
Yeah, we've been waiting for that. Sean's... To me, they almost died. Scumbag Hustler, two of my favorite Sean movies. This one is growing on me now. I just watched it once, and I watched it technically because I actually shot a lot of it, so I was looking at it through a different set of eyes. So, but now, you know, we're looking at it. This is my second viewing, I think, of the film.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, like I said, I don't have much to say about this this part here.
It's funny, man. Like, so much of my movies are shot in my house. And so much of this film is shot on this couch right here.
Sometimes you can see the hole in the wall. Like, you see right there in my head.
That bothers me so much, that hole in the wall.
Well, it's a continuity thing, too. So you always know it's the same place you have the hole. As we said in the beginning, we were trying to hide the hole. I said, well, why hide the hole? It gives it a little character.
Yeah.
He's reading the list of names. That was a funny part too.
Yeah. It was so difficult working with Sky initially when she first showed up, because like I was so worried, because I wanted Sky in the film because I wanted her and Vlad to do a fire show in the film, and I was hiring her specifically for that. And then when she first showed up and read, it was just terrible. I couldn't believe how poorly she read. But Sal worked with her, and, you know, whatever you guys think of her performance, it is miles better than how she initially read when she showed up to do the film. She worked very hard, and Sal worked very hard with her to help her progress acting-wise. And I think her performance I'm happy with overall.
The dirty bedroom. It was a lot of fun shooting in this bedroom, tripping over
vibrators,
underwear, bags and bags of New York City condoms, which we used in the first Crack Queen, which I thought was pretty funny. And yeah, we had to take lights in and out of this room. And see what's happening to Sean right there? That was Sal and I during the production, you know, including four of us. I loved when this happened because this was so organic, this scene.
Yeah.
And I didn't notice that you hit the mousetrap until you get up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, you got the mousetrap on his knee. And I went down. I was like, oh.
Yeah, this is actually a one-taker.
Yeah, this wasn't one-taker. That's what I'm saying. I was like, whoa, while I'm shooting it. I was like, he's got a mousetrap on. It's like, perfect.
Yeah, you guys were laughing so hard. I'm like, it sounds like it's good. Let's just go with it. So, yeah, this one, I had to shoot this a little creatively because we never got my end of the conversation when we shot it.
Yeah.
And I intended to go back on it, but then it's hard to replicate the lighting and the exact circumstance. So I just use a little bit of flashback footage of her when I'm talking, and then we see me get up at the end. And this bothers me a little bit. We could see, like, the light.
Yeah, I noticed that,
the
too.
The light thing in the back. Hopefully people don't notice it too much.
Well, you should have pointed it out, Sean. How are you going to know?
Well, if you're listening to the voiceover, they obviously saw the film, and they're seeing it again with the voiceover. So if they're seeing it twice, they're not bothered by it.
When you're shooting guerrilla filmmaking,
things like that happen.
Things like that happen. When there's only two or three people on set, there's like, when you're working with a full crew, there's a whole set of eyes on what you're doing, and you have people to look for continuity errors. When you're setting up shots, I mean, how many setups were we doing today, Sean? It was crazy. It was like crazy numbers of setups with different actresses coming in and working with them. So it was like, they were really long days. They were fun days, but it was constantly running up and down the stairs of the brownstone, setting up all these different shots. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we didn't get more continuity errors and stuff like that, you know, little stuff in the scene, is a miracle, especially the way we shot this film. But the hallway was kind of tight in here. We shot a lot, and it was kind of hard. Here, it kind of looks like something outside if you're really not looking at it.
Yeah, it's only when the door opens that you really notice.
But they're looking, they're basically focusing on Cybell kicking the shit up. Now you see, there we go, there's all light. Hello.
Yeah. And you can see Cybell's head at the top behind my shoulder. She didn't fully go down the steps. I wish she would have went down the steps. It was either like, not use that cut. I figured it's better to use the cut because it's funny and maybe people won't notice the top of her head. And also, it finally gets me into the shot, because without that, I'm not in the shot at all. So it finally shows that, okay, I was on the ground the whole time.
And we were shooting part of this conversation, and then Sean would shoot the other part, sometimes by himself. So we would have somebody shouting the lines over there, so, you know, so she knew who she was working off. It was funny. So while I was watching the movie, I realized I shot one part of it, then I don't know if I shot the other part of it. So
for this particular scene, you did. There's a phone conversation later on in the film that you didn't.
Yeah, just I
but
shot.
You
yeah.
shot both ends of this conversation.
The old-fashioned wedding mirror shot.
Yeah. But again, Sal worked really well with Sky to get this scene going.
Sal worked with me on this movie. I'm in this movie too. So I'm not an actor. I really respect actors because it's hard, you know. And I have a lot of patience with actors because of that, you know. But this, like I said, we were for the actresses that were coming off the street and doing this. We got a lot out of them, you know. So I was very happy after seeing the. Sean's first cut of his, you know, we got a lot out of these actresses. They, you know.
A lot of non-professional actors, a lot of models, first-time actors, like someone like Sky and Vlad, who just mainly fire shows. So there's a lot of non-actors that did a pretty decent job and ended up doing something pretty good in here. So back to the famous couch. Now, this is actually very much real. This is actually a Bible that someone did mail to me, an actress did mail to me.
Why'd they send you a Bible? What's the story behind that? What did you do to send you a Bible?
I don't know. Like I tell people, Alan Smithy is Sean Weathers. And the only reason I didn't just go by Sean Weathers, because you notice a lot of the actors in here go by their real names.
Yes.
I thought about going by my real name, but I figured, like, it's my movie. So anyone who would see it because I'm in it is already going to see it. So I might as well have, like, a different name, you know?
Well, people who know you see the similarities in your character.
Yeah, but it's just basically a different version of me. And, yeah, someone actually did send me the Bible along with a note. And they earmarked the exact same page that I earmarked and everything.
Why did they... What did the note say? Like,
I don't know. She did a topless scene in one of my movies, and then she thought I was going to burn in hell, and I ruined her life. Topless scene in Hookers in Revolt. I won't say her name, but she had topless scene in Hookers in Revolt, and evidently it changed the whole course of her life with that.
Really?
Yeah. This scene was fun. This scene took forever to shoot, but the end result is I'm very happy with it. But yeah, I remember just being in that room for hours with Erica, shooting this stuff, getting the lighting right for her, and
she's so good.
Yeah.
And she's so hot too.
Yeah, she did a lot of ad-libbing in this too, so. I actually trimmed this down from the original cut. I like the original cut.
Yeah, so do I.
The original cut was 2:40. I think this one is a little under 2 minutes. Everybody liked it. One person said it ran too long, and that ran into my insecurity of it.
Yeah, I thought it was
fine. I thought it was a little long, but either way, the best parts are in here. I think it could have gone the long, short version. I don't think either is a minor crime.
Well,
but,
the great thing about Erica is that she's so good that she gets it all in one take. Mm-hmm. And she's good at getting the character out. So I just, like I said, I'm a big fan of Erica. So you can't have enough screen time for me.
Yeah. Scenes like these are my favorite because it's just me and the actor one-on-one. And there's not as a time constraint. So it's just me and Erica. It's like we had a lot of chances to figure out where we want to go with the scene. And it was like, all right, let's, that's where we camp with the fact that let's just chop it up and have her saying the different parts in different places. Because it's a long monologue. And I think that's part of why you thought like 2:40, it didn't feel long because of the way we shot it.
Not the way.
But if it was like one shot of her sitting in one position, it would have felt like 2:40.
She's in a hot outfit. She's doing all these strange positions, and she's Kim Kardashian. She's being that vapid actress, and it's fun. It's fun to watch her act. I mean, like I said, I just cut my movie with her, and the hardest part about Erica was trying to figure out which of her takes is the best because they're all so good. Yeah. So when you get an actress like this, you don't mind seeing her on screen because she chews the scenery.
Yeah. Speaking of chewing scenery.
Sure does. And then Steve. We worked with Steve on the set first weekend I think we shot.
Yeah.
We worked with Steve.
Yeah. But Steve was supposed to be a bigger part of the film, but like I said, it, as far as the crew wise, he ended up playing the full part on screen, but
sure. Wow.
Chewing scenery. Chewing it up.
Like I say, we got to make that 70s film. This guy, we were just talking about this guy this morning. Did you tell me?
This guy showed up to play. Now, the thing is, like, I was running behind because I had shot like 95% of the film. I had a few scenes left. And literally, we shot all of Jerry's film, Coexistence Beneath the Surface of Film. Jerry and I co-produced, and Jerry directed. And we shot all of that before I came back to shoot the last 5% of this. Now, this guy came to read for a guy who's going to play this executive producer. I'm like, this guy does not come off like an executive producer. But he came off like somebody who should be on screen. So him and I ad-libbed that scene together, and I shot it with him, and I thought he added some humor to it. So.
And here goes my film debut.
Yeah.
In my office, in my actual production office. So
yeah,
this was my acting. I've always played cameos in my movie, but nothing too severe. This I actually had to remember lines. So once again, Sal was right off camera here, actually running the camera during these scenes, and coaching me on how to play this douchebag fucking film director, which I'm not a douchebag. I don't think I'm a douchebag film director. Everybody seems to get along with me on set.
Hey, you're on screen with Alan Smithy.
Well, yeah, I gotta compete with Sean in this scene.
Well, I'm saying as far as being a douchebag director...
Yeah, douchebag director. Yeah.
You can't be more of a douchebag
director. This is my picture right in the back. There's my picture of Ice-T with the Krakoon. We met Ice-T.
We didn't fully get your...
My awards.
Your award on those. A little bit to the left.
Those are my actual awards from Krakoon and Blood Marsh Krakoon. So, yeah, I keep those in my office. I don't display them in the house like a douche. And right on top of that, there's a little blue truck that was given to me by some strippers in L.A. when we were showing Blood Marsh. So that's a whole other story in itself.
But yeah, this was a very cramped spot to shoot because I think I tripped and you tripped.
Yeah, I trip in there when I'm not filming.
Yeah.
It's a house we built outside of my house. It's a little log cabin. I have a bed in there, refrigerated TV. And, yeah. I had to take this scene over. This was actually supposed to be Joel's part.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, Alan.
That's a funny story. Yeah, we get to Joel is in the movie. But Joel was supposed to play this part. And then it didn't quite work out. We used Joel for something else in here. So
Didn't work out, to say the least. Joel is a director, man. Joel should know the plight of a director. He should empathize. Joel had at least an hour on the train
to learn his role.
If he didn't study his lines at all, because I met with Joel, he didn't know his lines. And he assured me, don't worry, I'll knock this out, kid. And I was like, okay, I trust you. You're a filmmaker. You know how this is. And then not only did he have a couple weeks after he told me that to learn his part, he had the train ride. Even if he didn't look at it at all, in the hour-long train ride at least, and in the cab ride after the train, he could have studied the lines somewhat. Joel showed up not knowing one word. The only dialogue he knew was, Oh, Alan.
Meeting Joel Reed was one of the highlights of my life, especially, you know, meeting him on the set of this film, because I've been a fan of Bloodsucker Freaks and wrote the script that I produced with Sean right before we did this, and I told Joel that the movie was basically inspired by Bloodsucker Freaks, and I thought it was funny that we were working with them. So I overlooked all of that nonsense just to be in the same room with Joel M. Reed. It was a great emotional high.
I loved it. I mean, yeah, obviously a kid, but yeah, having Joel in it, no matter what size role he played, was just a great joy, and meeting him in person was just a great joy. He had a stroke recently. Thank goodness he's still doing well. But yeah.
There's an original Krakoon check from the Krakoon movie, how I paid my actors and actresses. And that's where I edit all my films. That's my workspace. So I spend a lot of time in that office. So it's got all kinds of toys and stuff in there. So we used it. I'm playing a director here in the movie that, you know, was supposed to help, but there he goes, fucking threw the check back in my pocket. No respect, Sean.
No.
There's Joel.
Joel. Oh, Joel.
This guy, and the driving him back was such a great pleasure. We talked for a long time, and it was a lot of fun. Sean's got a lot of stuff behind the scenes of Joel, and there's Lloyd, who I've met at many festivals, and been a big fan of trauma films forever, especially the early Toxic Avenger films. And I got to see the new Nukem High movie when I met him at a film festival. He's a pleasant guy. Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Yeah. Yeah, the shock on his face when we finished in like 5 minutes was priceless. He's like, what? We're done? Oh, and I gave him the money. Oh, wow! He was just like, he was shocked at how quick it was, because we only did like 2-3 takes. And then how much money I paid him. He's like, what, thanks? You know,
guerrilla filmmaking is fun if you know how to do it. Sean knows how to make guerrilla films. That's why Sean can make so many films. Doesn't take much, guys.
Yeah, it just takes like a camera and a little imagination.
That's it. But I mean, look at this. You got Lloyd Kaufman and Joel M. Reed, who are basically at war with each other right now over the rights for Bloodsucking Freaks.
Yeah. So. Yeah, they are. And Joel are not. They're back to back here, but you won't see them back to back anywhere else.
Grand life. And that's Marty, one of my crew.
Yeah.
Marty played in the Bo 2 Raccoon movies, and Sean asked him to be in this movie, so it's crossover.
Yeah.
My crew, Sean's crew.
Yeah, I needed someone to play a fan, just someone to show the other side of the Fappening, where somebody was actually a fan of mine's. And I love this part here when he sticks his hand to the camera.
Marty's not, that arm does look a little bigger than the other one. I don't know.
Yeah. That was fun shooting with Marty.
Oh, and this scene. This scene was shot almost, I think, 2 days after those two cops were killed in Bed-Stuy, right? This was the time we were shooting this.
It was around that time.
It was like, and the neighborhood was full of police officers, and there was press all over the place, and we're walking around the street with fake bags of cocaine and a gun. We had a gun. We left the gun in the car, I think, because we shot. And we're in a park, right? A couple of blocks away from what is happening, we're shooting this scene. And the only thing I'm worried about at this point is that somebody's going to come over and start asking us questions because we don't have permits or anything like that. And I'm always worried about permits in public parks. Sean is not too worried about that stuff.
No, I'm not worried about anything.
I get worried about
a lot of. I do a lot of gorillas. You can't tell from this film that I do a lot of gorillas.
I know you do a lot, that's what I'm saying.
Because this film is like 90% interior, but like my last film prior to this that came out, Scumbag Hustler, was like 95% outdoors, and it was just shooting all over the streets. This has got a lot of interiors, but yeah, I don't really worry about permits.
You have a lot to explain when a cop rolls up on you and you got your face covered.
A cop did roll up on us shooting hookers in revolt in this park, and we forgot handcuffs because I played a cop in Hookers in Revolt, and we forgot the handcuffs at my house. I wanted to bring them, and so we had the actor just hold his hands to the behind his back to pretend he had them on. And when the cops pulled us over, that's one of the first things they asked for was, do they have handcuffs? And I was like, thank God we forgot those handcuffs.
I know, that would have been, yeah.
So.
And Adonis here was really good, too. It was the first time I worked with Adonis. And Adonis was really, really good.
Yeah. This Adonis was in a few of my films, but this one he showed the most range. Because I didn't really ask for range from him in the other ones, because he played tough guys in the other ones. But this one, he's kind of a tough guy, but then he also has like this other side to him where he's kind of like has this desperation to make it in show business, which a lot of these characters have that desperation.
That's what it's all about. It's all about, you know, trying to make it famous, doing anything you can, blowing the director.
Adonis did not blow me.
No, Adonis was 100% man. He was a nice guy. I'm not talking about Adonis, I'm talking about the girls in the store. Sorry about that. No. And the funny thing about this was is that this was all handheld, and I was a little nervous about this scene because, you know, I haven't shot this much in a long time. I started out like Sean as a guerrilla filmmaker, you know, carrying my cannon around the streets, you know, avoiding the cops. So all my other films have had permits, and you know, I've had permission to shoot in places. So this was a little bit of a jump for me. And like I said, it was right after those two cops were killed in Bed-Stuy, so I was really nervous about shooting outside those days. But we were fine. It worked out really nice, and the scene looks good. I like that park.
Mm-hmm. This is actually the second movie, speaking of Hookers in Revolt, that had coke on my nose. I also had it in Hookers in Revolt.
Well, we were telling Sean it's a little... It was a little overboard, but it is a funny image.
Yeah, yeah.
Looks like somebody sandbagged it with a sock with flour or something. It's like...
I really went for the humor in this film.
You can tell Sean doesn't do cocaine. That Sean is straight-laced.
I've tried it before, but it's not something that I...
Yeah, and Sean gets great props for, especially in Scumbag Hustler, for playing a junkie. He was actually accused of being a crackhead because he plays one so good. And I know Sean very well. Sean is the farthest thing from a crackhead you could find. It's like throwing a pebble on the other side of the world. Just goes to show you what a good actor Sean is. And this movie's, especially after seeing it, Sean's acting like a coked up nut job after the movie, and then he does it good. Sal was just saying this morning after he watched the film of how good he was in this scene.
Yeah. It was actually it was getting cold here, so that helped me with the crackish antics. I just went with the cold, and that helped me with the moving of the jaws and the crackling of the teeth and all that stuff. Adonis really sells this here.
Yeah.
That was what I was worried about, because he never really showed a side of selling. He just showed the tough guy side in my previous movies, but I like the way he sold this here.
I couldn't even see it on film either. This was one of the shots in my
I wrote head. This in because the coke wasn't on my nose. That wasn't supposed to be a part of the script.
Yeah.
And since it was in there, like I just said, why not? Let's just start with the coke on my nose in this scene. So
Another actress that was a pleasure to work with, too.
Rachel Robbins. Yeah. She's the one to introduce or to set me up with Erica.
Yeah.
So I was a big fan of Rachel, and I was glad she accepted the role in the film and got a chance to work with her.
Yeah, this was one of the days we shot in my place. We wanted to mix it up a little bit to get away from Sean's apartment a little bit. So, at my house, like Sean's, we used a lot of my house in Blood Marsh, and we used my yard in a couple of films. So I'm almost done with using anything I can in this big house of mine. So we used the last remaining scenes here for Sean's movie. We actually used this room for Demonic Frequency too.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But it's in the dark, you don't really see it.
There's a song in here that we obviously say the lyrics to, but yeah, I only got it. I thought of the, I didn't write the scene thinking of the song, but then after I read the scene with her, with Rachel, she brought up the song. I was like, I was thinking of the song too. And I was like, screw it. Then I just wrote the whole lyrics of the song in here as well. So.
See, that was funny.
Yeah.
Like I said, when you're shooting something, you really, sometimes you don't get it. Mm-hmm. You know, you're basically working on the technical aspects of the scene, which is different from when you're a director, because as a director, you're watching the actors, you're watching how they interact. You're not worried about how it looks on the camera. You're just worrying about how it looks. And looking through the camera, it gives you a different perspective again, you know?
Mm-hmm. We were working in the... when I met you.
God, I remember when that song was popular. I hated that fucking song. Oh my God. It was like...
Poppy
I was
songs in... generally tend to wear on you when they come out because they overplay them too much.
Well, yeah. You hear it. And that song, I was like, I remember, I wasn't a club. I was more going to the punk clubs in the city than going to the discos. But, you know, if you wanted to meet chicks, you would go to the dance clubs and everything. And I remember going to dance clubs when New Wave was out and that song was played constantly. So when they were doing that scene and they're reading the lyrics for the song, the only thing I'm thinking about was those shitty old days in the clubs listening to that crappy music. Music was so horrible during that. Oh my God.
Yeah. This is another spot where Sal shined through, because there were certain things I assumed, like, when you work with experienced actors, sometimes, like, you take their experience for granted, and I just assumed that I wouldn't have to, like, flesh out all of the script to Rachel. I just assumed she'd get it. So I took that for granted, and I didn't go over things enough with her. And there were certain things that I didn't realize she didn't get. But then Sal went over with her, and she was like, oh, that's what that means. I was like, ooh, thank God Sal's here. You take it for granted that, like, you know, because they have experience, they're going to get everything that is written on the page. But you do have to actually, you know, go through it with them and make sure you're on the same page with them.
I always like to talk to my actors and actresses before we get on set and just give them a little push in the direction I want. And if the actors and actresses are good, you really don't have to direct them. You could just let them do their thing and you could kind of veer them off. Good actors, that is. When you're working with people who are not used to acting, you have to direct a little more and you have to babysit them a little more. But the great thing about this is these actresses, you know, the main actresses in this movie are all professional actresses.
Yeah. So I like that dissolve there where it's like kind of like staring at each other for a second.
It was a lot of fun with this. I remember this scene.
Yeah.
This was a fun day on this set. This was probably one of the most tenuous days on the set, I think.
This was the Joel day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we weren't really late. We were waiting for a bunch of people to come. You know, I think it was snowing. It was the beginning of all that snow that destroyed New York City over this winter. So I remember we were getting a lot of snow. I think you actually see it in some of the movie here. You see some of the snowflakes. But this was shot right before New York City was covered in foot of snow, whatever the hell we got.
Yeah, a lot of snow. But yeah, Steve did a pretty good job.
He did a good job.
He did a pretty
good
job.
He really did. I was a little dubious in the beginning because it's the first time he ever acted. But, you know, sometimes people get it. Mm-hmm. You know, they get it. He was good. Yeah, okay. The blue walls make me laugh because we spent so much time in the house. And every time I'm looking at the movie, I remember, you know, we lived at Sean's house for a while here.
Do a paint job on my house before.
Yeah, I think so. We have to fix. I'll fix that hole for you. That's easy. Fix the hole in the wall. So now we could put a cover on the couch with a new wall and look like maybe a painting back there or something.
Something. Because God knows I'm going to have to be shooting in there soon. So.
And we spilled a lot of blood on Sean's carpet.
Oh my God, there's still stains all over my apartment. There's one particular spot that is just drenched in fake blood by the where we killed Cybele. You'll see that later on.
Oh yeah, God.
There's one spot that's just flooded with blood.
Flooded. It was. Yeah, we didn't want to step in it and track blood all over the place. So that's what happens when you work with gore movies, you know. On my films, I have two guys that just deal with the blood, that just pump the blood, deal with the blood. They're my, I call them the blood masters.
So on my sets, I don't even have two guys, period.
Well, that's why we were doing everything. I was the blood master on this set, too. Yeah. Sean and I were both doing. I did the gore, the blood and gore effects, which wasn't really intricate stuff on here, but mm-hmm. we've learned to do these things because we don't have the money to pay somebody to do it. So you learn how to do it yourself. I mean, for one of my movies, I made all the prosthetics. I learned how to make my own prosthetics, and it saved me a ton of money.
You came up with the fake knife. If you didn't come to my house with the fake knife, I was using a real knife for the whole film.
Yeah, you know, I have a knife. I have knives that are actually set with tubes and everything where you could pump blood through the knives, and it looks like you're cutting the neck open because the blood is shooting out. Mm. I make a lot of gore movies, so I have a whole office space full of gore effects stuff and things with pumps. So I brought some of the stuff on Sean's set here. We used them on here. Yeah. But Sean's been away from the horror genre for a long time, so
yeah, it was.
I've been doing nothing but.
It's funny. I think it was Erica, or one of the actresses, said, "Oh, thank God you have a fake knife, because most people just come and set the real knife." I'm like, "How dare they? You could get hurt."
Well, you remember Sarah on Demonic Frequency? She had a fake knife, and she wound up cutting everybody. So you know, it's just there's the vibrate. I've tripped over that many times. Yeah,
this old duality thing where you have my movies and my camera on one side and duality of all the sex stuff on the other. So
these are scenes I wasn't involved in. This was Sean did this. So this was all new to me when I watched the movie.
Yeah, I just recently shot this a few days ago.
She's so good. Yeah, she was really good. Pleasure too.
There's certain actors you work with and you're like, man, I gotta work with this person again. Erica's one, and then Tina's definitely the
other. I would love to put her in my new movie, but it's like Sean said, there's only so many parts, and sometimes, you know, the actress just isn't right. You know, sometimes you cast an actress and you're not happy afterward. Mm-hmm. You said, I should have done something else. So you kind of get this keen sense of who's gonna work for you. Mm-hmm. And she would have worked for me, but I picked Erica, and I'm very happy with Erica's work in the movie. Mm-hmm. Even though she would have been great too, I don't think I would have been unhappy with either one of them.
You would have been wrong with either.
But I worked. But the thing was, I worked a little more with Erica than I did with her.
I think for what you were aiming for, performance wise, Erica probably is the better fit per se. Like for what you were looking for, but I think she would have knocked it off the ballpark as well.
Like I said, being familiar with somebody helps, and when you've worked with somebody before on set, and you know, you've got a rapport with them, you mm-hmm. kind of understand them a little bit, so it makes your job easier.
Yeah.
And Erica, we would pick her up and bring her to set. She lived very close to us, so it was easy to get her back and forth. And you know, we treat our actresses very well. We feed them. I made tea for them, but unlike Cosby, I didn't put anything in my coffee or tea, so we were cool.
Yeah. I don't have There's to nothing more that. Sexier to me than a nipple barely showing out the side.
Yeah, nipple.
And for me, that's just so sexy to me. Just barely.
This guy looks just like John Milius.
Now, this is the thing. The reason I shot this like this, one, it's artistic. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was also out of necessity because I was shooting directly into the sun. It wasn't an issue because I adjusted the lighting, but I didn't realize how damaged either my lens is damaged or it's really fucking dirty. So I couldn't show this regular. Another reason I couldn't show it regular is this guy is a comedian by profession, and he was just not coming off intimidating at all in any way.
He was trying to be funny?
He wasn't trying to be funny. He just said he couldn't come off intense. We read it like 20 times. He was just not coming off. He had zero intensity. So flashing kill on the screen and putting it in red
helped it out a little bit.
It helped out his performance a lot because, like I said, without that, you really focus on his reading, and his reading is very tame for what I'm aiming for, and also you see all the crap on the lens that covers up. So sometimes a lot of the creativity comes out of necessity in films. So, and here in this scene, I really like the lighting in this scene. Once I saw the opportunity to light half her face, I'd be like, that's perfect.
It's really nice, especially with the background, the window. You see the neon sign outside. It's a cool shot.
Yeah, yeah. The man, I saw that.
I love brick walls. Something about a brick wall.
Yeah. You really get time to work on shots like that. Like I said, when you're one on one with the actor, or whether you're in a situation where time is not a factor.
Exactly. When you have when you have to bang out 30 setups in a day.
Yeah. When we're banging, like when we did the stuff with the girls on the couch, it's hard to be artistic because A, they don't know what's going on in the script. They're showing up the same day and learning their part. and you're trying to bang them out as quickly as possible so they don't get antsy. And, you know, and they're not professionals. But when you're dealing with someone like this who's a professional, like Tina Cross, and you have a lot of time to do the setup, and she's going to know her lines, and you can, gives you a chance to be more creative. So.
There's our knife.
Yeah, yeah.
One of them, we have two of them, one that's hosed, and one that's for prop. So. And my wife is a medical examiner. When I brought the knife, she said, wow, that looks like a real knife that was used to kill multiple people. So. Yeah. It's good to have a medical examiner's seal of approval on weaponry.
I like the fact that we see Rachel in the mirror. Shot.
Yeah, I did a pretty good job. I haven't shot in a long time. I'm back up DP on some of my films, but I have a really good DP who just basically sets my cameras up and everything for me.
Yeah, there's only one thing I regret from the film is that there's a lot of like side shots of my face, like profile shots. I wish there were more straight on shots of me looking directly towards the camera. Especially with this scene here.
Yeah, this was the this is my house too. Yeah. And I saw the opportunity to use the mirror in this shot because we were trying to do a one shot, which like I said, I'm not a DP by trade. I'm a photographer. But when it comes to shooting film, it's a different, people don't get that. It's a different animal. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why you appreciate a really good DP when you're working in this business. He becomes like gold to you. You know, you don't want to get rid of him. You don't want to lend him out to anybody. It becomes like, you know. Plus, good DPs are expensive. I'm lucky to have a DP who, you know, when I have little projects that I need done, he works for free for me. You know, when if we make money off it, I give him a percentage of the profit. So it's nice to have that working relationship with somebody.
Yeah. Like I learned a lot about like shooting from the like with the side profiles and the frontal. Like the side shots work for my character as someone in this film because like when you get the side shot of someone's face, it's more so like they're not letting you into what they're feeling.
Yeah.
As opposed to seeing straight on, you do get what they're feeling. So there's a lot of side shots of my face in this film, which I think works for most of it. This is just the one scene I wish that we got more of the frontal part of my face because it's more of my emotional scene. But I like the way this overall this scene was shot because there's only one cut here, and it's when the camera swings. I don't know if we passed it or not, but there's one point when the camera swings from me to Rachel that there's a cut.
You really can't even see it. It's so good. It's a good cut.
It's a good cut, and it worked out well because I didn't want it to be like a choppy scene. I wanted it to feel like organic, and without the least amount of cuts you have, the more organic something comes off. When you're doing a lot of cutting, it just comes off like you're bringing the scene together and editing as opposed to like the actors are bringing the scene together on the set, you know?
Well, sometimes you have to do that when an actor doesn't get it and you have to feed them lines and you have to cut it that way. But, like Sean just said, as a filmmaker, getting a steady shot like this in one take, it adds real reality to the situation. It makes it look real.
It makes it feel more intense.
Yeah, too. And it's like I said, the same thing with the last film, getting these actresses, and they all did it in one take, and it flows so nice, and you don't have to have the camera moving off them onto the other character. It's just, it's nice. And especially when you're editing, it makes your job as an editor so much easier. This was a fun shot. I was laying on the floor here.
Yeah, I was aiming for like a Kubrick Shining shot when Jack Nicholson was trapped in the fridge. I wish I looked down more so you could see my face, but overall I like the shot. It's creative. It's different.
Yeah, this was a good shot inside my bedroom.
Yeah.
My red room.
Here's where the colors do pay off.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I was bouncing the light off the ceiling so she could get a little red on her too, so she could kind of blend in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it worked out well.
Like I said, this was fun. We get like when I shoot some of these movies, my DP sometimes takes an hour and a half to light a scene. We were setting the lights up in a couple of minutes, you know, not even. Yeah. Okay, two days. See, how's it look? Again, reflections look good, good. It's fun shooting that way because you get a lot done too.
Yeah,
and it does add a sense of realism to the film too. If you know, depending on what you're going for.
Mm-hmm.
For this film, it works really good. And we were using Sean's camera on this movie, which is different than my camera.
You know what's funny? That like I had a few people see this. Maybe about three or four people saw this before we did this voiceover, just to get some feedback on it. And it's like I see my character as the victim. I truly do. Everyone tells me how much of an asshole my character is. I guess this is why there's so many parallels with Alan Smithy and Sean Weathers. And I guess that's why I'm a decent actor, because I there's not one character I've played where I did not believe that character was in the right. Even in coexistence beneath the surface.
That's funny.
I'm being 100% honest. From that movie to this movie to all my movies, I always feel like my character's in the right, you know? So it's interesting, like, getting the feedback from people who saw this was like, Tina saw it, Tina Cross, and she was like, I wanted to text you the first 5 minutes into the movie to say what an asshole your character was, but I figured you'd take it the wrong way if I text you you're an asshole. That's what she told me. But I was like, asshole? This guy's a victim here.
Well, see, I look at you as a victim too here. So.
Well, thank you, yeah. Jerry.
I guess it's because I know you too, and this is so close to your life that I don't... I look at you... Listen, when you're a filmmaker and you're making movies that are a little edgy, you're going to run into problems, all kinds of problems, problems with actresses. Like Sean said, he had an actress that did a scene and then all of a sudden later didn't want to do it and made his life miserable, sent them a Bible. These are the things that happen.
I'm an atheist. That offends me. That offends me. You know?
I don't send
her atheist paraphernalia because she's Christian.
Well,
send
her book, like, There Is No God. You know?
I know.
Well... Sean and I agree on that, too. We agree on a lot. I think that's why we get along so well.
Even if I wasn't an atheist, let's say I was a religious, but I was a different religion, you know? What if I was Muslim or something?
There's my knife. Yeah, if you're Muslim, yeah. Well, Muslim, you would have to pull a jihad, I guess, but...
I know, but I'm saying, like, sending me a Bible, I could have been another religion, you know?
Well, the funny thing is that Sean, I never made movies with nudity in them before. My horror movies are straightforward gore movies, no nudity. And when I started working with Sean warned me about repercussions coming back on you with some actresses, you know, just coming out of left field. So, yeah, I understand why Sean is a victim in this movie, because it is very close to reality, and Sean has had to deal with shit like this, and we've talked about it. So, Sean, I look at you as the victim in this movie, so fuck everybody else. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what they think.
No, it doesn't.
But this, as a filmmaker, you know, you watch this movie, and you can understand the frustration of being a filmmaker and a lot of what Alan is going through in this movie. He's just trying to make his movies, you know. All the fuck he wants to do is make a movie.
That's all he wants to do.
And, you know, he took some pictures of broads, and he was hacked, so now all of a sudden his life was turned upside down. He can't get a film made. Nobody gives him money. He's become toxic. We've heard that phrase a lot recently. Toxic. And, you know, the drug doing scene.
This was actually Sal's idea, right?
Just
crush it and sniff it.
Something I think some of us used to do in high school with black beauties back in the old days. But we never had that much powder on in those, because then the teacher would know what the fuck we were up to.
What's a black beauty?
Black beauties were uppers you used to be able to buy when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing was, they were black, little black pills. You used to open them up and you used to drop it on the table and snort it. It was like snorting coke, kind of. Mm-hmm. And it would give you like a dopey, like a rush.
Mm-hmm. My eyes were so red because that shit really got to me. Yeah. I got a lot of it in my nose.
One of my movies, we did a fake crack. We had, I don't know what it was, bacon soda or something. The guy actually sucked it up and was like almost puking. Yeah, there's the gun again.
I've snorted bacon soda before.
Yeah, it's bad. There's the gun that we were so nervous about having out in the street because of what had happened in Bed-Stuy. I remember I kept thinking about, should we have a gun out here? And there's Alan on the floor again.
Yeah. This time we actually get to see me on the floor. I think it works out fine because I'm on the floor twice, so you don't need to see me on the floor twice. Yeah.
Yeah, this scene, when Adonis, yeah, this was funny. I'll talk about it after it happens so you can actually understand it a little more.
Yeah. But this was another one of those instances where too many things were going on at once.
Yeah.
Adonis was ready to leave. We had to coordinate the fight stuff. And there was one take that I really wanted to use because Adonis was commenting the fact that, like, he only cut my ankle. You'll see I cut his ankle, like I should be doing something. And Sal made the great suggestion that he should be elbowing me as I'm going for the mask. But it was, like I said, there was the issue of coordinating the fight scene. My mask kept falling off. And I couldn't get it on at one point. It took me like 10 minutes to get it on in the first take. So there was like so many things going on that I think like we accidentally hit record when we thought it was pause and pause when we thought it was record.
Yeah, my mistake.
We lost the take when he was elbowing me. But yeah, I think the scene works fine, though.
And I'm sure I'm on the floor next to Adonis, and I say, whatever you do, don't grab my leg. I just had brand new pants. I said, don't grab my... And what does he do? He grabs my hand. I got a big bloody handprint on my pants.
You actually have to stop that scene with a freeze frame. Not for creative reasons, but because Adonis never died.
He never died. Okay.
If you hear me in the scene, I say, die already.
Die.
That wasn't even me talking to...
You have to direct... When to
Jason. That was me talking to Adonis, the person, not the character.
I've learned...
Yeah. Die. Fucking die, you know?
The one thing is when you make gore movies, this was a cool shot because we just put the camera in the trunk.
Yeah.
And just let it record.
A Tarantino type shot.
Yeah, it worked really well.
Yeah, I love this shot.
Yeah, when you're killing somebody, you have to direct them on exactly when and how to die. Because some people will give up that. They won't give up the ghost. They'll be screaming and yelling. You're stabbing them. And fucking blood is all over the place. And they won't
like
die.
30 times.
And they won't die.
But yeah, this scene here is supposed to be a slash dream slash drug hallucination scene. That's why like it cuts from me to the drugs to now we see the footage in black and white. And women that weren't actually part of the lawsuit. But if people get it or not, it's still a lot of action, and hopefully they'll get it. But if not, so be it. I reverbed the audio.
Yeah.
So it sounds a little echoey. And I blurred the edges of the screen to give it that like flashback type look and went with the black and white. So hopefully that's enough to let people know it's not really happening, especially since I did drugs right before. But even if they think it's real, it's fine. But just so you know, that's the intention it's supposed to be.
I like this cut here, the way you did that, because it goes from killing one girl to the other. This was the fact of someone who didn't know how to die. We had a director.
Nobody knows how to die.
They just kept like Sean was choking her for like 15 minutes and she wouldn't die. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, eventually you have to stop breathing, like that he's killing you. Nobody can last that long.
Yeah.
And we had to cover up girls in certain ways in the movie, too, which was...
Yeah, she had a C-section or something?
Yeah, so we tried to cover...
You can see a little bit of the top of it, but if you don't know it's there, you don't really notice it, I think. This is the scene where you say I got full frontal? Or this is the girl?
I think we see a little vag here.
Yeah.
See, there you go. There you go.
So that's not terrible. If people have seen my previous films, they've seen a lot more than that on screen, so...
Well, yeah. But what are you going to do? It's really hard to... like I said, it's really hard to shoot around stuff when people are running around naked, you know, and you're trying not to catch... And, you know, Sean... Shooting these scenes went on forever, too, and, you know, we got a lot of stuff, so Sean is cutting just a little scene. This was like, one of the scenes we came up with on the fly. Remember this?
How
to kill him. Which, I like this scene. I like this
scene. We were looking around, and I commented to Jerry, like, is there anything we can do? We're just stabbing everybody. I remember early on in the film, you said you wanted to do a psycho-type scene, and that comes on after this, where we kill the girl in the shower. But then later on in the film, I think this was a day we had shot with...
Amani
and another actress later on in the film.
Yeah.
I think it was like your last week coming out in Brooklyn. And I wanted to get something a little bit different. And that was one of the things we came up with was using the massage table. So, and this was what the one you wanted to do with something like The Shining. And
it's a good thing we had a shower because the girls would just like strip down and go in the shower after we killed them. It was funny. I like that. I remember this.
Yeah.
And I remember this shot too. I kind of like. This was getting back to my roots too, which was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Sometimes. Actually, the only reason I held on this shot so long is because I wanted to play the whole song. So
it works, though.
It does work. It does work. So.
Yeah, we would just take the girls and throw them in the shower after their scenes. That's how.
I don't know if we threw them in the shower.
We didn't throw them in the shower. We had to help one or two of them in because they, especially Cybell. Mm-hmm. And here's Cybell. Cybell is awesome. I love. I've worked with Cybell a couple of times now. So professional, such a sweetheart.
Never complaints.
Never complaints. What we did to her in this movie and in my movie Coexistence, oh my God. I've had actresses complain because the yogurt was too warm or something like that. We didn't have a certain amount of food on the set. This girl went through hell, especially with Sean here, what we did to her on Sean's movie.
Yeah.
Cybell was one of the people we had to physically walk into the shower.
We literally had to physically walk her in because there was so much blood on her. She couldn't see her way to the shower.
Yeah, she couldn't see her way to the shower.
But this is an example, this scene of like how a script for a guerrilla film, a true guerrilla film, is just like a guide on how to get you through the movie.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times like you'll write the ideal film in your head, but you know, as a guerrilla filmmaker, it's not going to come off the way you write it. And there was supposed to be dialogue with her outside of the apartment, and then dialogue with her inside. It's like, screw it. Like, it just works well with her just inside. And there were a lot of decisions like that made throughout the film where it's like, eh, we don't need that. Eh, we don't need this. Oh, we could tweak this. Oh, let's ad-lib that. And that's how a lot of this stuff comes together.
It really works.
Even this, like, this, I didn't intend to shoot some footage here, but the boom mic was in the shot in the living room. So I want to stay out, it's right here at the top right, and it shows a lot early on, so I want to minimize the amount of footage out here. So that's why I just cut in some bedroom footage real quick, and I cropped the shot, I stretched out the image to try to get the boom out the shot.
Fucking boom mic, we were having problems with our mics during this film. Oh. That was the biggest problem with this film was the mic, because we had a fucked up wire.
Yeah.
And we were hearing like,
Oh my god.
A lot of time was spent just trying to get the mic right.
If you weren't there, I could never get the mic right. Yeah, sound was fucking terrible.
I'm used to working with shoddy equipment and having them, you know, work through it, and that's what we did. Like I said, you're working. That's why I use the pun of being dropped into the jungles. It's basically like that sometimes. You have to really improvise. This is the scene that ruined Sean's carpet.
Right, it's still ruined. If you guys look at the bottom right, there's a copy of Vault of Terror 1 on screen right there.
Promotion. Yeah, we love doing that.
But this is like, there's a lot of cuts and a lot of edits I did in the film to cover up for like mistakes or accidents or things that just naturally happen with guerrilla filmmaking that I'm used to because I always make guerrilla films. I never have like a lot of time and money to do films. But this is the one that I'm happiest with.
Yeah, this was good.
Because we didn't get enough coverage to shoot this scene. We did not. And the fact that like this fade right here, There was no build up for me walking up there, so it's like
I think that worked out much better.
It worked out so much better than if we got me walking up there.
This was where we had to physically walk, so I fell into the shower after this scene.
This going in slow motion, I ADR'd a tagline to throw in there, and I had to fade to black because
the weight was really heavy too. We didn't want to actually get too close to
There was no, we didn't have a coverage way of making it not look like a hitter.
That's H.G. Lewis, right? That's fucking H.G. Lewis shot right there.
And if you guys notice, the blood is dripping very slowly
onto his coffin.
Yeah. But it's like I went really slow. I slowed down the video. So we see the blood dripping, but we don't see her breathing. So, and this was one of the scenes I shot later on in the film by myself. That was when I realized, like, man, I really need to get some, like, funny lines in the film. So I was like, let me just go over the top when
Freddy
killer.
Freddy Krueger lines. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's what I was aiming for. I was aiming for, like, Freddy Krueger.
Well, when I watched the movie the other night for the first time, that's the first thing I said was, it's like Freddy Krueger. Yeah. That mask is so fucking creepy. You know, when he first showed it to me on the table, I didn't think it was that creepy. But once Sean put that mask on, it fucking really looks creepy.
Especially when you can't see the eyes, too.
The little chipped out piece on the face and everything. You can't see the eyes, too, which is another great thing about it. And it fits his face perfectly with his hair sticking out of the back.
Yeah.
It's creepy as fucking hell.
Yeah, it is.
It's like I said, I was like, really? And then once he put the mask on, Sean became this fucking maniac. It was great.
Yeah. Once I realized the film was going to be like more funny than a lot of humor to it, I was like, you know what? Let me go, like you said, in a Freddy Krueger / the Joker type thing, and get some one-liners and some stuff in there. And a lot of this stuff I either ad-libbed or I just came up with the dialogue right before I shot it. So, and this was another. This was the girl I mentioned earlier on in the film, and
I didn't work with her. So.
Yeah, it was just me and her on this day, and I just set up the camera and then walked into frame and stuff like that and just shot it with me and her. So it worked out pretty well.
It's amazing how cell phones have become so prevalent in films now.
Oh, yeah.
It's
funny. In a lot of horror movies, that's the first thing they have to do is figure out why the cell phones aren't working.
Exactly.
Like, why didn't they call there's no coverage in this
area.
There's
no coverage. We only got
one bar, no coverage. How many horror movies start off, like, explaining that so that that out the way?
In the old days, there was somebody on a road with a payphone, and they pick up the payphone's dead. You know?
Or they cut the
line in the house.
Yeah.
You see that one shot of, like, a scissor cutting a lot. Hello? Hello?
You know what? It's not different. It's the same thing.
It is the same thing.
Early on in the movie, they cut the wire. Early on in the movie, there's no cell phone.
In the old days, it was telegraph. You know, the guys, the robbers are coming to hit the town. They hit the telegraph, and someone cuts the telegraph line.
The great train robbery.
It's always cutting out the communication.
Yeah.
What did Lenny Bruce used to say? You're trying to stop the words. You're trying to stop the communication. It's like, yeah, we're trying to cut you off. And cell phones have become the modern day version of that. It's amazing how things stay constant. It's so funny.
Yeah.
But I've noticed too, in my last couple of films, cell phones have become very prevalent, and they become part of, especially in the last movie, cell phone becomes very important in the last movie that I did. So, you know, it becomes very vital to a scene. Mm-hmm.
I've had a lot of dog spray. She sprayed me with so much dog spray. Yeah, my dog died a couple years ago.
We're working with Short. He's been spit on.
Oh, yeah.
It's
A lot.
Yeah, a lot.
That's why I keep saying I'm the victim here.
So. You are the victim. I'm agreeing with you.
But yeah, it was actually dog spray. That's the closest thing I had to looking like a mace container. This was actually ad-libbed. It was actually, I think it was her idea, the actress. Because I was like, I need a funny line to say to you at the end. And then I remember, like, she had a pre-written statement for me.
The pre-written statement is great.
At the beginning, and then I have a pre-written statement for her at the end. So,
I think this was really fun. I guess I didn't know about any of this stuff. So when I was watching the movie, it's the first time I see it.
Yeah, because the reason I had the pre-written statement is because, again, she showed up that day and she couldn't remember all that dialogue. So I was like, let's just have it as a pre-written statement, because it sounded like a pre-written statement anyway. So then it worked out at
the end. It's funny, in this movie, Erica's sitting at this end of the table, and in my movie, Erica's sitting at the other end of the table. Low budget filmmaking, guys.
Yeah, I want to get that Beware of Dogs behind me.
So. I noticed. I said, I didn't see that in Sean's room, and I like that when I saw it in the picture.
Yeah. And also, we had shot this Erica stuff early on in the film, and I had shot this stuff with my end of the phone conversation late in the film.
Yeah.
And after I heard her lines, I'm like, I couldn't read the lines that it was scripted originally for me because I played it straight. I was like, I can't play it straight. I got to Freddy Krueger this up. I got to go over the top because her acting is so good, she's going to blow me off the screen. So that's why I actually, like, rewrote it on the down low. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's what you got? I remember, like,
we were feeding her cheese slices. Yeah,
right. Yeah, she wanted the cheese slices. She's like, this will be a great idea. She's one of those people that stay in character. Honestly.
Oh, yeah, she doesn't come out of character. Yeah. We were trying to break her out of character in the last movie we shot. And every once in a while, she would break character a little bit. But she really does. She stays in character.
Yeah.
She wanted the cheese. And, you know, when I first met her, I said, boy, this girl's obnoxious because look at the way she's acting. And I realized she was really just a good actress. When I cast her in my movie, I had a conversation with her. She's a singer. She's in a jazz band. She's very accomplished. She's a very smart girl. And that's what tells. She's a good actress.
Yeah.
She really pulled it off. I was very happy with her. Like I said, Sean could tell you, I sing her praises constantly, especially after looking at the footage on my film. I'm so happy with her. And looking at her in this movie, she's great.
Yeah, she does a good job. She does a really good job.
Getting good actors and actresses is half the battle. It helps you out so much.
It really does. It really does. And like I said, I mean, I was so impressed by her, I went and rewrote my line. So that just tells you how impressed I was by her. I was like, I can't let her show me up in my own movie.
Sean likes that. Well, in the new movie, Sean is like the major star, like this one. He's in like almost every scene. And
it's funny that you say that, but in your movie, it's probably the movie that I'm in the least amount of scenes in of my most recent films. Because there was a day where I didn't even show up. Yeah. That would never happen on a set of my film. I'd be in like every single scene.
Yeah, one day Sean didn't come on set. We didn't need him for one day. We were shooting some stuff with other actresses. And Sean lives in Brooklyn, so it was a little bit of a pain in the ass. It's easier for us to get to Brooklyn because we drove. That knife does look real.
Yeah,
it does. Like I said, my wife told me that's where I was in the store. She goes, that one looks like something that
I ad libbed that part at the end. I was like, thank God I ad libbed that because it worked so well. When I looked in the mirror and said, ooh, scary.
But, this was some more scenes in my place.
Yeah.
The closet. I think Sean could barely fit in that closet. All the crap that was in there.
I managed somehow. Yeah.
This was so funny shooting this.
Yeah, she's good. The thing I like about her too is like, I think that the actors that I most like are the people that are that can work in the framework of my films. I mean, they can ad lib, and I think that's why I like her so much, because she can ad lib, and that's why I like Tina, because Tina can ad lib too. This is a good shot because you see her in the camera really well, and you see it's a good shot because you see the camera shot of her and you see her perfectly well.
I used to be a photographer in another life.
Yeah, I like that shot a lot. Because I use a still from this for the back of the DVD too.
She had her own makeup artist come with her that day and do her hair and everything.
I still paid for it, so I consider it my makeup artist.
It's your makeup. You pay for. Oh, okay.
It's her makeup artist, but I paid for it. So.
Yeah, like
that was another thing I ad-libbed on set too. I was like, you know what? Let me get a selfie in here too. Again, a lot of the stuff I do is just so actors don't show me up. I'm like, you like making selfies? I'll make a selfie.
This was the last shot on the day.
Yeah, last scene.
This was the last scene of the day. I remember this. We basically had our stuff packed. We were shooting this on the street.
The only thing like I hope people don't notice is that my house is in the background. It's not supposed to be where my house is.
Why are you pointing all this shit out?
Because it's a voiceover commentary. This is where you do that.
But still, you don't want to point that stuff out.
No.
And this scene, I shot this without any pants. I just wanted to let everybody know. All right? Okay, I'm going to give it up. I have no pants.
This is, I mean, listen, people are willing to buy your movie. Because first of all, people can bootleg your movie online.
Yeah.
And people can also get like a download of it for cheap. If people get the voiceover, that means they actually bought the DVD. And then they saw the movie, and then they want to watch the movie a second time to hear the voiceover. So they deserve to hear all this stuff, you know? So.
And there's Vlad, who I hired too in my movie, and was very happy with what Vlad did in my movie. This was a hard scene to shoot. It was dark. We had no lights outside. It was just... And this was the last shot of the day. We were all beat up.
Yeah, everybody's
And it started to snow, too. If you look at the streets, like I said, New York this winter was hit with a lot of snow. And this night, we were fighting, like, snow outside and raining, and this was a good touch. I kind of questioned this when you were talking about this, but it worked out really nice. I was like, why do you need a fire show in here? And then watching the movie, I say, brilliant. It works out really nice.
Yeah. I like it. And this film is initially, it's supposed to be shot around Halloween, and they were doing a fire show on Halloween, so I was supposed to go to the club and record them at the club. But obviously, when that didn't work out, then we...
That's a whole other story.
Oh, that's... I'll get into that on a podcast or something. Because I like to stick on what we're watching. And if I got into that, we'd end up talking about that.
Till the end of the movie, minutes. Yeah. Exactly. That's good. Remind Sean about that and ask him. Then he'll tell you a funny story.
Yeah. But yeah, I like the fire show. I mean, they gave us a lot of footage. I didn't need all of it, so I just picked like a couple parts, but there was a lot of footage.
The one thing you don't see here was all the cats in the yard, which I loved. There were a whole bunch of cats watching us. And Sean's mom was talking about, Sean doesn't like the cats, and the cats are all outside watching us shoot this fire show.
This was ad-lib, too. Like, we weren't sure how we were going to kill him.
Yeah, this worked out really nice to see.
Then I came to Jerry. I was like, what do you think of me just sitting next to them when they're already dead? And I figured after they did the show, I ad-libbed this part, too, when I clapped. I'm like, because I was just going to come out and then walk up to the door.
I like the shadow, too. It looks so good.
The shot looks good. I think the scene comes off well.
And we had to do this a couple times because I didn't get what Sean wanted with this. Remember? He would go, what are you doing, Jerry? And I was like, what? Yeah. And then he finally said, this is what I want. I said, okay, now I get it.
Yeah, you're right. We did shoot a couple times.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think this works well.
This works really well. This we got blood on here, too. Remember, we had to clean up.
Oh, my God. I was so pissed at Vlad because when Vlad got up, there was like a pound of blood there. He's like, yeah, I tried to tell you. God, Vlad.
I like when it goes down your pants and he's trying to...
Okay, now this is a flashback to before the happening. Hopefully people get that. If they don't, then so be it. But, yeah, so that's the end of the Fappening. Unless you people like it so much and then there's a Fappening 2, Rise of the Leaks. But,
Rise of the Leaks?
But unless that happens, that's the end of the Fappening.
Hey, I want to be a director who gets his phone hacked. I want to be laying around with all these girls in the bed. Come on. Come on. Sean got all the fun in this movie.
But yes, this is a flashback to what led up to everything. And we hear that they reference a Sony deal that went bad. We hear they reference Joel.
You mentioned my name,
Jerry.
Yet. As a guy who's better off playing mobsters in movies than being a director,
you're better off in a mob than a film set or something.
And everybody who knows me knows that's I'm not really into mob movies. Making them.
No, I didn't say mob movie. I said you're better off in the mob than on a film set.
Yeah.
So.
Another thing very far from my real nature.
Yeah. Well, hey, I'm being an asshole, so...
I thought it was funny. I was laughing about it.
Yeah.
I wasn't supposed to be in this movie, so... And I was a last-minute
death. You saved me, because...
Which is what happens. And I had to do it in one of my films. I had to step in the last minute. And Sean and I have talked about this, that you're on set and somebody doesn't show up, and it may not be a major part, but it's a key part to what you're writing, and you have to step in. I did it in a short film we did. Last minute, I had to play a racist asshole, which I'm not. So it was a stretch for me. I just acted like an asshole, and I thought it was pretty good. But I had to step in to play the part, because what am I going to do? Cancel the shoot. Everybody else is there. You have someone step in. I pulled people out of a bar to be in a movie because somebody didn't show up.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So whatever you have to do, it's... That's what's fun about making guerrilla films, you know? It's like everything, a lot of stuff is on the fly, and you create things while you're there. Mm-hmm. And you rewrite dialogue and rewrite scenes, and the movie takes on a different air at that point. So,
yeah.
Filmmaking is a fun way to make a living.
I'd suggest this. If you're a writer, learn to direct. If you're a writer on the indie scene, learn to direct.
Yeah.
Because your script is going to get changed a lot.
Yes.
And unless you're not sensitive to that, then...
And everybody is. I don't care who the fuck you are.
Because even with Jerry, like... Your film wasn't nearly as guerrilla as mine. Not nearly as guerrilla, because you had a cinematographer. You guys set up the lighting like a day before and stuff like that. Mine's was just extremely guerrilla. But even though yours wasn't as guerrilla, you still gave me the opportunity to change up the script a lot.
Yeah.
So even if it's not completely guerrilla on indie films, the script gets changed a lot. So if you're a writer...
Yeah.
Either direct your own film or be comfortable with the fact that your script is going to get changed a lot.
Yeah, well, I don't mind it being changed by, like, Sean was a producer on my film. So, and Sean knows what he's doing. Sean is an actor and a writer. So when Sean comes to me and says, I think this will work, I'm very open to it. Let's do whatever makes the movie work.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That has to be your attitude.
Yeah, it has to be. And because if you have that attitude, you're not going to be able to work well with others and play well with others, which is what this business is. Sean and I get along really well on the set, and both of us have given each other constructive criticism, and we've gone with it, and it's made the movie better. So,
and like I told Jerry too, like going into it, I was like, because you know you want it to be more co-op, and I was like, listen, no, you direct it, and let me take a second, you know, the second chair in this, and you know, I'll help you out. And I told him, like, I'll bring up suggestions. If you don't like it,
you don't have to take it.
Yeah, because like I gave you suggestions for the basement scene, and you went with it, and I wanted to change the doctor scene.
Yeah.
And you didn't want to. I was like, okay, we'll go with the, you know, it's like you can't be sensitive. It's like,
no, it's a process. It's the process. And if you work well with others, you're gonna get a good product. And this movie, it really turned out great. I mean, after I saw the cut, we did a lot of work on this movie. And after I saw what Sean did with it, I was really happy. I said, Sean did a great job with this.
Mm-hmm. This is one of the opportunities we had where we were able to get some nice lighting in here. Very film noir type lighting, shadowy and stuff like that. I really specifically wanted it for her scenes because her character was supposed to be kind of the devil temptress type.
Yeah.
That's why she's all in red with a red lipstick, and all of her scenes tend to be lit
flipping
better than the others.
Doors. Yeah, flipping the barn doors here to make that. I remember this. This took a little while to set up, right?
Yeah. Well, that's why I didn't want to do it with every scene, because I didn't want every scene to take such a long setup. You know, I just rather, especially with the couch scenes, you know, let's just get a nice lit with all the girls in the montage early on. So, but yeah, what you guys saw before this was a montage of the different girls going into the apartment. Again, what led up to the fappening, what led up to them coming upstairs, and eventually a little bit of the old in and out.
The old in.
But yeah, that hole really bothers me in this shot, man. It's just like,
we're gonna fix that hole. I'll fix that hole for you. Yeah.
It is,
but
it's
like I said, it shows continuity. Character, it's all in the same place. It's fine. Now you get rid of it. Finished. They look at your hand is right there.
This was your suggestion, right? Or one of us.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It was a suggestion made on set.
Yeah.
That the hand works better than me coming into this shot. I remember the first take we did of this, you were like, okay, cut, let me go. I'm like, no, let her take off her clothes.
Like I said, I was a virgin when it came to shooting sex scenes. I, you know, never done it before.
Yeah.
And like Sal and I said, we saw so much of Sean naked during the filming of this movie, you know. I feel like he's my son at this point. You could lose your clothes by dropping them on that floor.
Oh my God. Oh my God. That bedroom was just so messy. It was just...
I lost a small child in that room. I remember trying to get our equipment together at the end of the day, going through, like, you know. I wanted to go and clean the apartment. Sean goes, come on, come do it.
Yeah. Please, my pleasure. Yeah, I'd love it.
Yeah, I have a daughter, and I'm always cleaning up, so I'm constantly keeping stuff off the floor because I'll trip. I'm clumsy. Stuff on the floor, like, especially Sean's, it was like, you know, we had no insurance either, so if I would have fell, I would have just been...
Ew.
I would have been living in Sean's house. Sean and I would have been on that bed like the Three Stooges.
And for those of you who don't get it, like with the ending, this is her hacking my phone. And this is, again, all this stuff is what leads up to it. We see the conversation about all the different producers that eventually turn me down later on in the film. We see the relationship with me and Rachel and her becoming a star. Then we see all the girls going up to my apartment to where they eventually have sex with me and I record them. And then we see that this character, Tina Cross, becomes my agent and eventually hacks my phone. And yeah, that's all what led up to it. So there you guys. You guys got a breakdown of the plot, a lot of behind the scenes stories. Anything else we left out as this wraps up?
Very good. Enjoy the film because I have. This is the second time I'm watching. I'm going to watch it again later. Mm-hmm. And when it comes out on DVD, I'll watch it again. So yeah.
Cool.
This was great talking to you guys.
Yeah.
And thank you for buying this movie because if you're listening to this, you actually bought the movie and that's what we want.
Yeah. And yeah, Jerry, also with the DVD cover. You helped me out with that too, Jer, because it was your idea to take pictures and stills.
Yeah.
So that helped out.